This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, that's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
Salona corner, and it's a goal by Marcos Alonso. Barcelona lead. They didn't pick him up on the back post. He knew what was going through his mind, but here's Rashford with an opportunity and scores for the fourth game in a row. Rashford has skipped away from Rafinha, right across the face, a goal and in. United go 2-1 up. It's Rafinha. Lewandowski.
Hello listener, this is Talk of the Devils, the Athletic's dedicated Manchester United podcast, coming to you in the immediate aftermath of Manchester United's 2-2 draw in the Europa League playoff first leg at the Nou Camp against Barcelona. My name is Kyle Anker and I'm stepping in on hosting duties for Ian Irving, and joining me in the belly of the beast are Andy Mitten and Laurie. Oh, hello gentlemen, how you doing?
We're good, mate.
Hi Kyle, you okay?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Hopefully you can hear us. There are some lawnmowers just on the pitch of the Nou Camp. They're about to bugger off, I think.
Yeah, we hope that the lawnmowers are going, because obviously they're pretty noisy. Not as noisy as the travelling Manchester United fans who've just left the stadium. They were high up on the third tier, 4,200 of them. But there were four lawnmowers and we're now down to two. And if they go off in that corner now, I'm going to celebrate like a winner.
While we wait for the lawnmowers, let's have a quick digest. Laurie, what time did you arrive in Barcelona this week?
It was quite late, actually, yeah. I got a flight landing about 9.40 local time, and it was a bit of a party plane, to be honest. It was a Ryanair flight taking off from Manchester at 6.40. Andy's going to celebrate in a second because he's getting
get off the pitch.
They're going down the tunnel, and we have silence.
They are, they're going.
In the Nou Camp.
One
beautiful.
Of them's going, turn that lawnmower off, yes,
there
he's turned
go.
It off.
He's turned it off.
Result, we've got perfect sound for
this
you.
This is amazing, we've got strong Wi-Fi. We're with the third tier of the Nou Camp. We can see Mezca Un Club. Have I said that right, Andy?
No.
No, but we'll continue. And I'll get back to my party plane anecdote, because you know if you're getting on a Ryanair flight at 6.40 from Manchester Airport into Barcelona for a Man United game, there's going to be alcohol, there's going to be chants. I sort of felt sorry but also sympathetic for an air stewardess called Chloe, who they took a shine to, and they just did loads of songs about Chloe, basically. She serves to the right, she serves to the left. You know, that girl Chloe makes, and then her colleague, you know, I've said it the wrong way around there, haven't I? She serves to the left, she serves to the right. That way it rhymes. But yeah, I landed it. Have I saved that, Carl?
I'm doing the fingers with my hands now, just taking a shot on my left and right.
Drinking with them, mate. Drinking all night.
It's just this altitude of being so high up in the stadium. It's doing something in my head. But as Andy touched on, that kind of support that was there from United fans on my plane getting into Barcelona then continued throughout the day today, right, in the city centre.
Yeah,
and then also, as Andy said, up in the third tier, they kept them behind for a lock-in for, I don't know, is it like an hour afterwards?
Half an hour, probably.
And they were singing songs. Paul Scholes was here, BT Sport pundit, pitch side, so they were singing his song. They were singing about a particular night in 99 that was kind of special. And at that point, the players that were substitutes are kind of doing their warm-down, so it's quite a nice image, really. But yeah, an entertaining game, right? A fun.
Oh, it was a great game.
Fun evening.
Oh, I thought it was a brilliant game of football between two teams on the way back from a bit of a slump, and we've just come out of the press conference, Carl, and I thought both managers were very interesting. I thought Xavi Hernandez was extremely complimentary about Manchester United. He described him as one of the best teams in Europe, and he repeated that a few times. And he praised Ten Hag. He praised the way that Manchester United were a danger on transitions. So he's sort of... I really like listening to Xavi. There was good humour. I thought that Erik Ten Hag wasn't quite as graceful. I think he was a bit angry at some of the refereeing decisions, as was Xavi. And Erik Ten Hag was saying, look, we could have scored four goals here. And yeah, that's true, but Barcelona could have scored more goals as well. My takeaway from this was that it was a brilliant game of football which lived up to the hype in front of 91,000 people. I thought it was a cracking game.
Statistics are claiming that might have been the best attended Europa League game in history. I'm always going to take Xavi's compliments to Manchester United with a slight pinch of salt, considering he did play in two Champions League victories over the club.
Yeah.
But your comment on Ten Hag being quite angry, I found quite interesting. Last couple of games, Ten Hag frequently bats away questions about refereeing decisions, but he seemed to really go in on this week.
Yeah, he did. And actually, it was probably my bad that I didn't ask him about it sooner, because we had a couple of questions from Samuel Luckhurst. Neil Custis asked a question from The Sun, and then I got the microphone and asked him about Weghorst playing in midfield, and then sort of asked him, you know, whether or not he was proud of his players or disappointed that they hadn't actually taken the chances. And he sort of started answering, and he went, anyway, the referee, and sort of you could see that he'd actually been waiting for someone to ask him about the referee this whole time, and he was still really angry, wasn't he? I mean, he got a booking for his protest during the game, and he continued that, and the kind of specific thing he said was that he felt the referee was influenced by the crowd. It was a good crowd, as Andy said, you know, the fact that this is a Europa League playoff game, and you kind of think this is almost beneath Man United and Barcelona, but actually it was a really great opportunity for both of them to show where they're at and sort of in these arcs that seem quite progressive. And so Ten Hag felt that crowd was on top of the referee, and he didn't, you know, he made that decision based on that. I don't know, I think Rashford was going through at speed. I've looked at it again, it probably is a foul, but it's not like one that's so egregious that you'd think, you know, that referee needs to be looked at. You know, I know Barcelona have paid a referee a few years ago, a consultancy fee.
1.4 million euros.
That came out yesterday, but you know,
for nothing, by the way.
For nothing. Well, for advice, yeah, it was, advice, wasn't it?
So, for advice. If you're listening to this and want to know more about why Barcelona have paid such a fee, our good friend Paul has written a piece on The Athletic. You can check that out in a bit. Should we just get into things, right? Let's start the first half. So, team lineups get announced at 4:30 UK time. It's Luke Shaw at centre back, next to Rafael Varane, Malacia left back, Wan-Bissaka at right back, which is quite interesting. Fred and Casemiro in the middle, and then what we found out later on would be Wout Weghorst as number 10, Jadon Sancho on the left hand side, Bruno Fernandes on the right, and Marcus Rashford up top. Laurie, I'm going to go to you first. You think Ten Hag got that right?
I think he did, yeah, because really, United played pretty well, didn't they? And they could have easily won this game. And certainly in the first half, when that particular formation was sort of showing itself, I think Barcelona were kind of a bit confused as to how to handle it. And particularly the chance that Weghorst got, I think, came from the fact that he was starting in midfield, because he kind of ran through to Bruno Fernandes' his through ball as Rashford was coming back, and the kind of Barca defenders were kind of more focused on Rashford and kind of forgot that you've got this sort of 6'5" striker that can score goals. We've seen him score one goal for Man United and sort of one offside goal. But you just felt that could have been a really great moment for him. I mean, scoring in the Nou Camp, wow. It was a good finish, but you'd think...
Good save as well.
Good save, but he should score.
Should have scored, yeah. And Xavi Hernandez also tried a bit of trickery, because he played Araujo at right back.
Yes, he did.
Which is not normal at all. And he admitted afterwards that was for the surprise. I was more surprised by the Barcelona lineup than by the Manchester United one. And so they're both at it. They've both got a lot of similarities as managers. I think it's to their credit that, just saw the statistics, 18 attacking attempts, I think that's shots from Barcelona, 17 from Manchester United. Absolutely love it when they're both going for it. And I think there's a spell in the second half where United were getting on top and I thought they could pull away here. And then Barca got that goal. There's so many subplots, sidelines. Marcus Alonso who put United ahead. I was supposed to interview him last Friday, but his father died, so obviously he couldn't do the interview. He doesn't score a lot of goals, and he scored and he looked up to the sky, and it was obviously a very special moment for him, but it didn't last long because Marcus Rashford scored and then Manchester United went ahead. Great, great game. Good atmosphere in the city of Barcelona on the day. Lots of people without tickets, Carl. Really hard ticket. Mm-hmm. Really, really difficult ticket. They weren't seeping through, really, into the market. I know one guy just kept trying and trying and trying, and he's the type of guy you would get where water wouldn't. And he just sent me a message 10 minutes into the game and said, "I've had enough. This is a disgrace." Blaming the club for him not getting in. And he sent me a picture of himself at the start of the second half at the top of the away end. He said, "I just ran as fast as I could, got away from all the stewards." And then I'm looking at him at the end of the game, like commenting on tactics. I'm thinking, this is brilliant.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to circle in on Marcus Rashford. It's 14 goals now in his last 16 games. Conversation now, is he the most informed forward in Europe?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I saw you say in our Slack channel, I'm sort of going to peek behind the curtain to borrow your phrase, Carl, calling him world class. And I think we're getting there, right? I mean, this has always been the projected hope for Marcus Rashford. And you've always felt, actually, no, there's this element to his game that isn't quite right. But now he seems to get the ball and know what he's going to do with it straight away and be a force on the field, like sort of scare other defenders, really. And I know he had that chance in the second half where he sort of snatched a bit at it. I think that second touch of his didn't allow him to cut the angle and he kind of lashed it into the stands. But I mean, the goal that he scored to begin with, and then the second one really, where he's absolutely embarrassed Rafinha. I mean, he made that goal just for his invention and his skill and his kind of desire to beat a man. But yeah, I don't know. What did you think, Carl?
I said it before. I think he's really getting a great understanding of when to go near post rather than trying to put it far post. So he did it against Nottingham Forest in the first leg. And now you're seeing when he gets one-on-one, the goalkeeper, he's got more than one way of scoring. I think maybe two or three seasons ago, he maybe had three ways. So he'd hit with a power, or he'd go far post and that Henri style finish. But now he can go near post, he can score with his head, he can go weak foot as well. So I always thought there'd be one point in Marcus Rashford's career where we'd go, yeah, that's world class. It might last a month, or it might last half a season, but I think we could go, that is a football player who is at world-class form. And we're getting close.
I think he is this season, Carl. I think he has pretty much... He's been better since Ronaldo when... I don't think he was last season. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was the season before.
No.
But this season, he's quite rightly being praised for... He's become prolific. And when we were talking before the World Cup, that was not a word that we were using. He's the most talked-about player among opposing managers. Xavi mentioned him several times. And there's one other thing with him. It's not an easy forward line to play in. I know you've got someone like Casemiro tonight playing behind you, but all those players around Marcus Rashford, are any of them having truly great seasons? I don't think that they are. This isn't Cole and York, and when it's not working, bringing Sheringham and Solskjaer. Has Jadon Sancho had a great season? Not really. Garnacho, is still coming through. Anthony Martial is injured. Cristiano Ronaldo has left. Valverde has just come in. So it's only really Marcus Rashford. Imagine how much weaker Manchester United would be without Marcus Rashford, because he's a player who can decide goals. He can do those moments of brilliance. He did it tonight in Camp Nou. If you're doing that in front of 91,000 people, then you're world class.
It did call to mind York and Cole, didn't it? Because they were having such fun on the pitch here in 99 or 98, yeah. 99. And it looked like Marcus Rashford was having the same kind of fun, trying things, you know, being creative and sort of showing off, really. I mean, it was like his own playground. It was great fun to see.
To come to their manor and to boss them, Barcelona have not conceded a goal here all year. So to do that and to look so comfortable doing it, and then to run in the corner, the opposite corner to the one that Andy Cole ran into. So he ran into a corner where there were supposed to be no Manchester United fans. But there were lots of people smiling there. I don't want to get him in trouble. Down in the main stand to the right.
How could you see that all the way from up here? You can see smiles, can you? Pearly whites.
I know people who were down there.
Oh, right, I see. Okay, right, I see.
Let's go from talking about one Manchester United player who might be world-class to talking about one Barcelona player who nearly went to Manchester United. This was a pretty good chance for United fans to get a glimpse of Frankie de Jong. How was he, Andy? I'm going to give it to you first.
He tried the balls which have come off in other games, but some of them were being cut out by Manchester United players. I thought United played him pretty well. I thought Ten Hag knows him well, tried to thwart him from doing what he does best, and don't think he had as much joy. It was more difficult for him when Pedri went off, because Pedri's such an important player for Barca. And I know Sergio Roberto came on and he's versatile and he can play absolutely everywhere, but he's not Pedri. Gavi, I used the word tenacious for him on podcast before. I put that with a capital T now. He's an absolute nutcase, in a good way. I think he's a great footballer.
He is surprisingly more physical than
he
could.
Yeah,
he can really throw his body around.
Yeah, and him and Fred were just smashing into each other. But there were duels all over the pitch. You know, there were times when Aaron Wan-Bissaka was getting forward and beating his man. I thought there were a lot of encouraging signs from both clubs. However, you can still tell that it's still not a vintage Barca and it's still not a vintage Manchester United, because these teams have been at top, and maybe because they've got flaws that allowed for such an open game, because the goals were actually quite frustrating ones to concede. Marcos Alonso got right up behind Fred. Robert Lewandowski got in front of David De Gea, so Rafinha's shot went through. I mean, I can see how it went in, but if you're De Gea looking at it again, and then there was an own goal at the other end. So I think the only truly world-class goal, was from Marcus. Mm.
Laurie,
what do you think of Frankie?
I agree with you. He had a quiet game, didn't he? It wasn't a game where you go, wow, we need to sign this guy again.
For 90 million.
Sorry, again. Try and sign him again. For, name your price. And listen, he obviously is happy in Barcelona, and that's why he didn't want to leave in the first place. So maybe it's all a futile exercise anyway. But I felt that Ten Hag, as you've alluded to there, Carl, with Xavi, praising United, I think perhaps his praise of De Jong was genuine before the game, but also helps to kind of rub somebody up the right way. Doesn't provoke him before a game like this. And I think he had a particular plan where he was crowding him, wasn't he? There was that bit in the first half where I think three United players were around him at one point, and Bruno Fernandes was the one to nick the ball away, and actually De Jong slid in and conceded a foul. And at that point, the Barcelona fans were getting on top because they felt like they were getting unjust decisions. But actually, it was a foul. And I think that kind of unsettled De Jong, and I don't know if he ever really got into his stride in the game. So, yeah, I think a good plan by Ten Hag and well executed by his players.
It's interesting to watch him come up against an English team, because Xavi talked about the physical strength, the legs, the energy, the non-stop mentality of the big English teams, and you don't get that as often in Spain. And Frankie had a taste of that, and I think he's a cracking player, but it wasn't his best performance tonight.
Scores at 2-2. Barcelona possibly without Busquets and Pedri for the second leg.
And Gavi.
Manchester United will go into the second leg and they will have Lisandro Martinez coming back, Marcel Sabitzer coming back, and possibly some other injury questions coming back as well.
What? Phil Jones?
You never know. On balance, which manager you think's probably going home happier?
Ooh. I think overall Erik ten Hag's in the better position, right? Because you're getting back to Old Trafford, you feel like there's a synergy between the fans and the players in that stadium this season. You feel like they'll will the team on whatever the circumstances are in the game. So they've got a bit of an advantage there. And just generally, it felt like they were the team with the momentum more than Barcelona. And as you say, they've kind of got more options now than fewer, which is what Xavi's got. But then I guess, in terms of actual satisfaction, Ten Hag was pretty angry, wasn't he? With the referee, with his own players for not finishing chances. I think generally, though, he has criticised his players before and been quite pointed, particularly after Arsenal, for example, where I think most people felt that was a good account that United gave themselves, but they lost the game in the end. I suppose they haven't lost the game here, so that's a crucial difference. But generally, I think he felt more pride in his players. He felt quite happy. He seemed, in between the shooting the barbs to the officials, he cut quite a satisfied figure.
I agree with every word of that, but I'll say two things. Barca are really good away from home, and I thought the crowd were very supportive here tonight, and I don't think the Old Trafford crowd has been good enough in similar ties against Spanish clubs in recent years at home. Against Sevilla in 2018, Old Trafford was appallingly quiet in the first half. It was as if, oh, they're actually pretty good, they can knock it about. And against Atletico Madrid last year, Manchester United, a much poorer Manchester United, but got a goal in Madrid and then came back to Old Trafford and Atletico outclassed them. And Barcelona are a better team than Atletico. And I do think Manchester United are the favourites now. I do think Ten Hag will be happier. I do think that Barca will really miss two or three of those players. But Old Trafford has got to do its bit next week as well, big time.
You said this before, haven't you, Andy? You've rallied the troops, yeah, and you're kind of provoking people here now that people listen to this podcast.
Yeah, it was disgraceful against Seville. Just people sat there going, oh, these Spanish are all right. They can knock it about. We're Man United. How can this be happening? It was appalling.
The one thing I would say there, and this isn't an excuse necessarily, but at that moment, United felt like they were above that particular moment, you know, that stage or that opposition. And I know that actually this is a kind of lower rung of the continental ladder, isn't it? But this feels like there's something building, so they are going to get behind this team. It feels like an upward arc, so they're not going to be kind of turning up thinking, okay, we can just breeze past Barcelona.
It's got to be brilliant. It was brilliant in 84. It was really, really good in 08. Probably 08 was probably the best atmosphere inside Old Trafford so far this century. Do you know that stand opposite is the biggest stand in the world?
Even bigger than the Sir Alex Ferguson stand.
It's even bigger than the Sir Alex Ferguson. It's the biggest stand in the world.
I love how Andy just interrupts his own thoughts to point out a piece of stadium.
It's notable, isn't it?
Knowledge that, you know, we're actually in here in an empty stadium. We haven't broken in. I'm happy at that.
A slight thought-provoking question for you. Second leg on Thursday against Barcelona. Mm. Then on the Sunday, League Cup final against Newcastle. Mm. How do you think Ten Hag's going to approach those two starting 11s?
Can you imagine if they win both those games, the atmospheres at those stadiums? Like, I know I'm getting ahead of myself here.
No, I'm with you. I like your enthusiasm. But imagine if you lost both of them. No, I'm not. We won't think negative. To win a first trophy since
I was trying to get carried away there.
I'm with you. I think he'll go strong in both of them.
He'll
very strong.
Yeah.
I think he thinks the players want to be playing. The players who maybe have overplayed have had a little rest, like Casemiro, and bring it on. I really rate Newcastle United. It'll be a completely different game because of how good their defence is. That said, I went on television last night and predicted a 0-0 tonight, so what do I know?
When in doubt, predict the score draw, is what I do.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Right, before we get into Barcelona in the second leg and Newcastle in the League Cup final, there's also the small matter of Manchester United versus Leicester City this Sunday, otherwise known as the Laurie Whitwell Derby. Laurie, any potential news about how Leicester might come to Old Trafford yet?
Oh wow, Carl, you really put me on the spot there. I could tell you Leicester's starting lineup for the 2015-16 season.
Go on, just talk us through how you think Leicester are going to set up at Old Trafford.
Well, I think
just run us through the suspensions and injuries.
I will say, Laurie, you have done Manchester United versus Leicester in the last couple of seasons, so yeah. You are well acquainted with them being annoying and beating United.
Well, I did watch their game against Tottenham, admittedly on Match of the Day, which was a surprising thumping for Antonio Conte's team. He comes back and after having his match out, after beating Man City, and they get walloped like that.
Where did you watch that? Where were you?
I was just at home.
All right, okay. You just can't keep track of where you've been the last few months.
To be honest, right. I can't. I'm not even sure I was home.
Fact that Andy Mitten is saying he can't keep track of where someone is in the world.
This is a pretty good triple threat, in it. So Sri Lanka, like last week, Hamburg at the weekend, and now Barcelona. I think in space of seven days. I think Leicester do look in a pretty good way. James Maddison scored a really good goal. I think he'll be an important player, and he's an interesting one, isn't he? What happens to him in the summer? I know this isn't what we're directly talking about now, but you know, he could be one that, because his contract is running down. I think, yeah, they've had struggles, haven't they, this season, Leicester, and you wonder if they can be got at. But I think since about Fez has come in for them in defence, I think they've looked more solid. And yeah, I still think United have got enough for them, though.
Got to. There's just been a couple of worries the last couple of home matches. That is there a lot left in the tank? That game against Crystal Palace, I was a little bit worried about that. Leicester surprised me when Manchester United won there on the 1st of September by the talk after the match to Brendan Rodgers about can you stay up? And the negative tone he adopted really surprised me, because they've been a success story, and he was pretty despondent and pretty accurate, actually, given where their league position is. Leicester have had some good results at Old Trafford, haven't they? So, and must win. I think if you look at the league table, I know that Manchester City beat Arsenal, but City have lost two games in the league in the last month or so, against Spurs and a team called the mighty Manchester United. And I'm sounding uneasy, because I'm trying to work out, are Manchester United in a possible title race here?
Let's not do that.
Probably not. But if you're not going to beat Leicester, you're definitely not. Mm-hmm. That's my point.
Okay. Instead, I'll do, Andy, are Leicester City a quote-unquote Andy Mitten good team?
They won the league. They were a fantastic team. Won the cup years ago.
Yeah, I think they're a good team. They've signed a couple, haven't they, in the January window, which I think was what had got Brendan Rodgers so despondent at the start of the season, where it basically seemed like they just weren't putting any money in or weren't able to.
Yeah.
Leicester have subsequently, or King Power rather, have subsequently converted a load of the sort of debt that they had into equity. So that's kind of been wiped out. So they've actually given a recommitted to the club. And they've signed Christensen, the defender, and Harry Suter as well, from Stoke, who's a good player.
He just called this all up on his phone, Carl.
Obviously, I remember
now. Because your question was an hard one.
I've seen them, but I saw Christensen play against Tottenham. I was like, who's that? And then I saw Suter play, and I knew he'd signed from Stoke. But they've they've firmed up that defence that looked so porous at previous times this season. And Iheanacho looks sharper again. Harvey Barnes looks sharp again. And they actually beat Villa 4-2 as well at Villa Park the previous game. So they've got four goals in back-to-back Premier League games. So
and former Leicester defender Danny Simpson in Barcelona tonight and wanted the full fan experience. That's what he wanted. He wanted to be with Manchester United fans. He wanted to come over, travel over. And, well, I've not seen him post-match.
I've seen him post from Instagram, yeah. Up in the God singing "You and I" to you.
Exactly, well, that's right.
He's been getting in the mix.
He wanted the fan experience. Did you ever live in Leicester?
No.
You spent a lot of time there?
I drove a lot, yeah. 2 hours on the A50.
Road of Heaven, I once called that.
Blimey. Right, that's enough Leicester chat. I must admit, Laurie, Andy, I am deeply jealous of the fact both of you got to watch that game in the Nou Camp. So for those that nearly watch this at home, give us a little bit of taste of the flavour of what the Nou Camp was like on Thursday. What were things that you picked out in the massive stadium that perhaps we didn't quite see on TV? They're pulling a great face here.
It's huge. It's absolutely massive. And to get 91,000 people, even though the capacity is reduced, I was concerned that a lot of good United fans didn't have tickets. The ticket costs were really high, although not in the Manchester United end, so that's got to be viewed as progress. I think it's been a nice couple of days in Barcelona. The weather's been pretty mild, it's been sunny. Laurie and I walked around the town. United fans were having a really good time. Just the scale of this place, and it's going to close down in the summer because Barca are moving out of here for a couple of years. So this will be the last time that the Manchester United fans who came over here will see it in this shape. Right in front of where we're sitting in the press box, you could see the TV images of the Manchester United players walking out the tunnel. And just on the right-hand side, there's a little chapel. And Nicky Butt said after playing here in 94, he wished he'd gone in that chapel before the game and stayed in there during the game. But when I looked at the players tonight, I thought they actually looked pretty confident when they were walking out. And maybe they're going to look confident and sometimes it can get taken apart. But it was good watching Manchester United go at Barcelona in a stadium where United have never won against Barca. Really was hoping that was going to come off, but United not won. But it's good. Loud. The home fans were loud tonight.
What I felt was, and again, I sort of touched on this kind of idea that this is kind of, you know, you don't really want to be here as Man United and Barcelona, but there was fans like waiting to get in for like a good hour, I reckon.
Yeah.
Because we got here really early, didn't we? And there's fans lining up along the railings. And they don't let them in until like 90 minutes before kickoff, which feels quite late really. But they felt eager to get in. It felt like, and to be fair, it was a real. I thought there was going to be some empty seats, as you were saying before the game about the fact that they weren't letting United fans in sections. So I thought, oh, there's going to be loads of empty seats then if they're turning people away on the door. And they might have done a bit of that, but actually, come kickoff, it was full.
Filled up.
And the section behind the goal was really noisy the whole way through. Buoyant with flags and drums, and you know that kind of section where you've got the guy at the front leading the chorus almost, and also what this bit. So there's a bit of the Nou Camp that has been taken out in the third tier. It's like just a segment just lifted up. Is that to be renovated then?
Yeah, it's so structurally they can get ahead of themselves doing the renovation, and they've figured that they can live with only having 92,000 seats,
and they can get by.
They started that in like September, so that was a reason for them doing that.
And Andy's touched on our little walk around the city centre earlier, and we actually had lunch with my old swimming coach, a guy called Sean Kelly, who used to coach.
He was a great lad, Sean. Proper United fan. I liked him a lot.
Stockport Metro. And we, you know, as he was saying to you, four Olympic medalists from Stockport Metro and five in the whole history of Spain. So he's now in charge of Spain's swimming programme.
Laurie was a good swimmer, Carl.
Well, no, this is what I was going to ask you. Is that the vibe you got?
No, seriously. And I know, like, I'll proper rip it out of you, but I didn't realise how good a swimmer you were. I just thought you, like, got in a paddling pool in your garden and splashed about for a bit. But you used to go swimming, what, how many times a week?
Nine times
a week. Nine times a week at your peak.
When I was 12, 13.
When you were 12, yeah.
When I was a chubby kid when I first came here in 99.
So you must have been one of the kids that turned up to school smelling of chlorine because you were doing early mornings.
Yeah. So my hair used to be so matted, which is I think maybe why I grew it long, because I was like, right, if it's going to fall out at some point for all the chlorine. Did you hear that? we've got some interlopers into the podcast. I think he wants to get a piece of Talk of the Devils. So that's why I think I grew it long. I had curtains when I was a kid, you know, it was the look back then, but I think I sort of grew it long because I was scared that it was going to fall out from all the chlorine. But yeah, I'm glad that you drew that from it, because actually anyone that knows me from swimming probably knows that I'm not actually very good, but in that sphere, better than your average, I suppose.
Well, there you have it. Talk of the Devils, a one-of-a-kind Manchester United podcast. We start talking about travel trips on Ryanair, we talk about world-class football strikers, and we end it while talking about curtains and swimming. Laurie, there's an on whistle match of the piece on The Athletic right now. Have you started writing your match debrief yet?
I've started writing the first paragraph, and it's going to be about the kind of what we're talking about here, the adventure that this feels like, whereas, you know, it might have been seen as an additional competition that United could have done without, and the focus should be elsewhere on qualifying for the Champions League. Actually, away to Barcelona, this was a really enjoyable experience that a load of fans will remember, a load of players will remember, Marcus Rashford certainly will, and it feels like the stepping stone to, you know, progress under Erik ten Hag. So touching on a few bits tactically and just more generally the kind of feel of this adventure that hopefully United are going on.
Sounds fantastic. Andy, have you got any new pieces cooking for the Athletic subscriber?
I have. I've done a couple this week. I did a big one on losing 4-0 here in 94. I did a guide to Barcelona as well,
which was excellent.
A lot of feedback on. And I am working on a couple of other pieces. I'm just not sure if my editors will appreciate me saying what they are right now. But one of them I really enjoyed doing. It was an interview with somebody, and I think we were just waiting for the two Barcelona games to pass and then to put them out. But my takeaway from this is it feels like Manchester United, if you think a year ago, right, United went to Leeds away and won and then didn't win a game until, August, Southampton. And the difference between the end of last season and the middle of this season is so significant. You're seeing players who are confident, turning up on the biggest stage. And I still think that while Barcelona have had the troubles, if you ask most Manchester United players, would you swap like for like now on the same salary and move to Barcelona? I think you'd be surprised how many would say yes. And so to come here and to go at them right from the first minute, because I think Wan-Bissaka put a ball straight over early on, was just a joy to watch. I've seen United get really taken apart here. Seen Manchester United lose European Cup finals to Barcelona. So I'm still a little bit scarred by that. So clawed a little bit back tonight. I just hope that at Old Trafford, and I think at Old Trafford, we can do another skull shin, bang, 1-0, move on to the next round and get, you know, FC Dog and Duck, bring us right down to reality that we're in the Europa League again.
I mean, we're talking right now, Juventus are playing Nantes, so I need to go double check that result in case a certain someone might be ready for a return to Old Trafford instead. Anyway, listener, if you are intrigued by anything Laurie's just mentioned for his piece or anything Andy's already written that is already on the website, don't forget you can subscribe for a special podcast price of £1.99 per month for a year when you subscribe to The Athletic using the code theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. That is theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod, the special podcast price of £1.99 per month for an entire year on The Athletic. It's got some of the best sports writers around, and once a week I write about United as well. So yeah, you can enjoy. Before we wrap up, it is nearing 11 p.m. in Barcelona, and I'm sure Laurie needs to take Andy somewhere to drink some sort of fantastic cocktail before he fails his piece. But
him take me for somewhere. Give over.
I've read your guide. I'm going to use it and then, you know, claim it's my own information. To
before you find a great,
I'm going to take him into the roughest little bar near the stadium and watch him go up and try and order some fancy drink and everyone just look at him. That's what I'm going to do. That's the Olympic Stadium over there, by the way, the tower with the things.
He's done it again. He's just pointing out another random thing mid-sentence.
That's what we're here for, knowledge.
To point out one extra thing, listener, we're going to be back on Monday where we're going to be able to catch up with other news around Manchester United, not just the Leicester City result, but also what may be an accelerating story about the sale of Manchester United. The Athletics also ran a fan survey on that subject. That should make for interesting reading. Laura, you've been going through that, haven't you?
Yes, we actually got a really good response. 7,000 people came back to us, which I know is not like a definitive sample size for a club the scale of Manchester United, but given these are subscribers, so people that have paid for the privilege of reading our stuff, and we're so grateful that you have done that, I think it feels like quite a valuable pool to draw from. The results are pretty interesting. We kind of asked them questions about who would you like to take over, how important is human rights, would you mind being owned by a sovereign wealth fund, that kind of thing. These are very kind of topical issues, and actually the results are pretty interesting, so I won't spoil them just yet. So go on the website and have a look, but obviously this is time to coincide with the soft deadline, whatever you want to call it, of bids to come in for the club. There's so much claim and counterclaim. We touch on a little bit of this in the survey that I've written up, the kind of the runners and riders, so to speak. And I know there's a lot of noise about Qatar at the moment. So Jim Ratcliffe's the only person that's publicly declared. We're hearing about potential approaches from Saudi Arabia as well. How that is all going to unravel itself with the rules on separation between owners of clubs that are in the Champions League. I mean, there's lawyers at play clearly here, where they're going to sort of find out how these different things can coexist, but we'll see. There's a little bit more information in there about the situation, but the fact that you've got this deadline here, it's a 5 p.m. US Eastern Time deadline, so 10 p.m. in the UK, and it might not necessarily be the big reveal moment, but I think it will be a sort of significant signpost in where Manchester United is heading, so it's one to keep an eye on for the website and all the developments throughout the day.
We look forward to the results of that fan survey, and we also look forward to hopefully a good result against Leicester City and the second leg of Manchester United versus Barcelona. Other than that, I think that's another episode of Talk of Devils all wrapped. Thank you for joining us. You need to go have a lovely dos cerveza, por favor.
Athletic.